Today we're going to start talking a little bit about acting on love, and we've been talking about love here for weeks and weeks and weeks, and it's obvious to everybody that knows anything about God that love is extremely important to God. I mean, what put Jesus on the cross was not sin, it was love, man. I mean, I don't care how you figure it out. The love of His Father and the love of the world, it was love that did all that stuff. It was what made it necessary. And the sin was there. It had to be dealt with because of love. I mean, if you think that God's going to take care of all sin, you're absolutely wrong. Because they that die in their sin are destined for a place. He didn't take care of all of it. He only took care of it for those that would receive Him. He only took care of it for those that actually cared enough about Him to come to Him. Anyway, so we're going to start talking about acting on love a little bit. We're going to talk about charity some. Now, love, we've defined this before, but there's things that we read in the Word of God and we assume that we understand what it means. I mean, there's lots of times I read something and I know what that word means. Then you go look this thing up in an 1828 dictionary and it takes on a whole new meaning. Everything begins to change. That's why I go back and I define these words and I bothered researching them and doing a little bit of looking into it so that I can give you a definition so you understand what God's talking about. What I really wanted to do years ago when I was working in that printing ministry, a friend of mine that was in the ministry out in Texas, he had a 1691 dictionary. And man, I wanted my hands on that thing so bad I could taste it because it was out of copyright. And I wanted to reprint that thing. And the reason I wanted to reprint it was because it would give us a closer definition to the meaning of these words than an 1828 dictionary would. I mean, I understand that Noah Webster was a saved man and he incorporates a lot of scripture and the gospel into it. And his attention is toward his creator. And so there's a lot of that in there. But if I could find a dictionary back from around 1600, I would have a better understanding of what they meant by these words. Now, the Lord never let me do that. And I think the reason He never let me do that, and I was getting real close to doing it when I got out of there, but the reason I think He didn't let me do that was because He didn't want us trusting what some man's opinion was. He wanted us to listen to the Spirit, you know, and be led by the Spirit, which I believe Noah Webster was. I don't think His dictionary is infallible by any stretch of the imagination. And while we're there for a second, I'll tell you something else that struck me this morning. We were coming by a church up here, Palo Fox and 10 Mile Road. And my wife says, well, that's a church full of a bunch of old people. I said, well, you're right about that. I said, but that includes us. She said, well, they're older than us. But I got thinking about that. I said, you know, where's the churches with the young people? Well, they're the churches that have a lot of activities for the youth, you know, and they got youth ministries and all that other stuff. Then I got thinking about it. What happened to the old-time religion? You know what happened to the old-time religion? You really want to know what happened to it? What happened to the old-time religion is the same thing that happened to this book right here. This book right here, at one time, was the accepted, infallible Word of God in all matters of faith and practice. That was what it was. Not anymore. Nowadays, it's just another translation. And if we don't like it, we can change it. If we don't like the church, we can change it. If we don't like the preacher, we can change it. And what's happened to it is, man became his own authority. Slowly, over the last several years, man became the authority. And this thing has been replaced. Now, I believe that this book that I have, I mean, Brother Selden and I put a little bit of conflict here, not significant, but I believe this book right here is what God intended me to have, every single word, just like it's written. And I believe that, you know, over there in Psalms, where it talks about the words of the Lord are pure words, as silver tried in the furnace of earth, purified seven times, thou shalt keep them, O Lord, thou shalt preserve them from this generation forever. I believe He did it, and I don't believe He did it and hid it someplace. What's the point in preserving the thing if we don't have access to it? Now, also know that he can take this book and he can translate this book in all the different languages and through his Spirit give them exactly the meaning they need, give me the exact meaning that I need. And I don't need an NIV, and I don't need a new ASV, and I don't need a Living Bible, and I don't need some Vulcan translation. You know? But what's happened is people have got to the point where they believe that whatever they believe is good. It's okay. And if you believe something, then okay. You don't mess with somebody's beliefs. Well, that only works if you believe the right thing. And like I said before, two people that believe different things are either both wrong or only one of them can be right. When you get right down to that level, what an opportunity do we have in our life to be able to verify that our opinion's correct? You ever thought you were right and found out later on you were wrong? I mean, unless you take that approach to yourself, well, you're on some shaky ground. I mean, you realize that when Cain killed Abel, you know why he killed him? Because Cain believed he was right. There was no humility in the man. That's why he was mad, was because he was wronged. He was offended. And nobody had the right to do that to him because he was right and his brother was wrong. Well, only by pride cometh contention. I don't want to be confounded to be contending with my Creator over anything. In fact, I'd like to not be contentious with anybody. I don't like confrontation, man. I just soon leave that by the wayside. And the older I get, the less of it I like. Now, let's get into this stuff. Love, what is it? The affection of the mind excited by beauty and the worth of any kind or by the qualities of an object which communicate pleasure, sensual or intellectual. Love is excited by pleasing qualities of any kind, as by kindness, benevolence, charity, and by the qualities which render social intercourse agreeable. You say, what? Well, that's close interaction with each other. You know, they've changed that thing like they have a whole bunch of other stuff, you know. I mean, that word, there was nothing wrong with that word a long time ago. Just like discrimination was a good word years ago. I remember when Oldsmobile's commercials, and they'd say, for the discriminating buyer. That'd be the last car you ever sell. You put that out today. Anyway, they've changed it. In the latter case, love is an ardent friendship or a strong attachment springing from goodwill and esteem and the pleasure derived from the company, civilities, and kindness of others. That's what's supposed to be going on inside the church. We're supposed to have love one toward another. That's what's supposed to happen. You know what's going on? They're arguing and fighting, you know. And you know, the guys over here don't want to have to move to that side for Sunday school. And these guys don't want to. No, it's a lot more serious than that. There's all kinds of stuff going on in churches today. And I mean, there's actual bitterness and hatred and everything else. There's people putting up with each other. And I'm talking about in the good churches. I'm not talking about the crazy stuff, you know, the nutcases and the weirdos. I'm talking about people that are actually saved under the blood of children of God, and they can't stand each other. That's what's going on. Why is that? No submission to an authority. Their opinion is what's the most important thing in their life. And if they believe they're right, they're compelled to act on it. Which means that that guy ought to leave the church, him and his whole family and all his friends. Cast out the scorner and the strife will cease. Well, let's get the mirror out, buddy. Who's the scorner? Well, it might be you too. Well, no, you know, things we say about our friends and neighbors is true. I mean, it's a mess. We're living in a time that's really a disaster. These churches like we just passed this morning are going to die. That church is going to die with the people that are in them. That's it. I mean, it's going to be over. What's going to keep it going? Just as long as the folks are there to support it, it's going to keep going. They put in new lights in the parking lot. That ain't going to keep it going. I mean, that may brighten it up from the outside and get a few more people to think, oh, something's happening over there, so we'll stop and go in and look. Hadn't changed a whole lot. I noticed right after they finished that parking lot was full. I mean, bunches of times that thing was full. Not anymore. What's going to keep it? You got to give people what they want nowadays, what they like nowadays. Well, do you realize how contrary that is to the church? Do you know why God says by the foolishness of preaching? Because preaching is contrary to us. His ways are not our ways. That stuff is absolutely contrary to what we feel and like and stuff. It's to the contrary to the flesh. So it is foolishness to us. That's why it says the preaching of the cross is foolishness to them that don't believe. The only part about us that compels us to come, read this book, understand it, is the fact that we are saved and we've got a spirit that indwells us and we've got a new nature inside of us that likes this stuff. And if you feed that black dog too much, you won't be coming. You know, the black dog and white dog. You start feeding that black dog pretty soon, even if you're saved, you're out there and you'll be just like Lot, grieving your righteous soul with a filthy conversation of the wicked. That's what you'll be doing. And the reason people need to be in church is because it feeds them. It ministers to them. Come hungry, leave happy. You ever go to a restaurant with somebody when you weren't hungry? That was fun, wasn't it? The hungrier you are, the more enjoyable the meal, right? If you're not coming looking for something here, if you don't want something when you show up, if that's the way it is, you're not going to get nothing out of this stuff. You want something here? You want to come and find out something about your Creator? You want to find out something He told you? You want to understand yourself a little better? You want to understand your life a little better? Then that's what you have to do. You have to come here looking for something and asking God for it. Don't come looking for it from me. I mean, if you're not looking for it from God, all you're going to get from me is something that you agree with. If you like it, it's because, well, I like that. I mean, I don't like all the stuff that I hear that's good preaching. There's a lot of stuff that makes good preaching. It's not good doctrine. We speak of the love of amusement, the love of books, the love of money, the love of whatever contributes to our pleasure or supposed profit. The love of God is the first duty of man, and this springs from just views of His attributes or excellence of character, which affords the highest delight to the sanctified heart. There you go, sanctified heart. What is that? Sanctified is separated, purified, cleaned up. I'm saved and sanctified. You know that? I mean, Nazarene Church used to say I was sanctified through a second work of grace. You know what sanctified is? That's that derivative from sanctuary, sacred, holy of holies, people. I am sanctified. I got a spot in there Jesus Christ cleaned out, and man, that thing's sanctified. And that thing is sealed unto the day of redemption. And nothing can get in there and mess it up. That thing is just like New Jerusalem. Nothing can get in there that's going to hinder it or hurt it. Nothing. No matter what I do. You say, well, you believe once saved, always saved. I believe once born, always born. I mean, when I got born again, I can't go get unborn and reborn and unborn and reborn. Man, that is nuts when you start talking like that. Anyway. Excellence or character, which afford the highest delight of the sanctified heart. Esteem and reverence constitute ingredients in this affection, and a fear of offending Him is its inseparable effect. You have a fear of offending God? There is no fear of God before their eyes. That's what's going on these days. You think those homosexual preachers are worried about offending God? When was the last time you saw anybody who was afraid of God? I'm dead serious. You know, it used to be in this country they wouldn't elect anybody to political office that didn't believe in a final authority, that didn't believe in a creator, a supernatural being that they would give account to one day. I was talking to a woman the other day in the real estate business. She wanted somebody to work on their air conditioning. And she was asking for some of the people to give them names of people they could trust in the air conditioning business. And that's one of the easiest things to rip people off. I mean, I know one guy that would take the motors out of stuff, paint them up with some new paint and sell them to the next guy and put the old one from the last house into theirs. I don't know one guy that would go out and change the Freon out to put a new Freon in. You know, he'd go out there and, we got to put new, this is getting worn out. You know, blow a little bit out in the air, you know, and put another half a pound back in it, charge them for recharging the system about once a year. I mean, just crooked stuff. My next door neighbor calls me over and says, their air conditioner's not working. I go over there and say, oh, it's right here. This relay is stuck, you know. And I banged around on it, got it working again for her. And I said, you know, it'll probably work for a while, but it's going to need to be replaced. Well, she didn't want to bother me, so she called one of her son's close friends who was in the air conditioning business. He came out and changed the thing out. She said, but it's doing it again. I said, really? So I go over there and I pull the thing apart and I said, Betty, show me which part's brand new in there. Man, everything's covered with dirt and nothing new in there. So I said, he just ripped you off. Charged you for the part, charged you to fix the thing. He just came out there and did the same thing I did, banged on it, got it unstuck. I said, call him out. Call him out here and ask him to show you which part was brand new that he just put in a couple months ago. So she did. He comes out there and opens it up. And she said, what was that new? Where's that new part that you put in there? Anyway, I gave her some advice. I said, I don't need an air conditioning man. I said, but if I was looking for one, I'd call Olive Baptist or I'd call Hillcrest Baptist or somebody like that and ask them if they got somebody in the church that's in the air conditioning business. I'd like somebody that at least I think they believe they're going to give account to a higher authority someday. Where's the fear of God before our eyes? What happened to it? God has been pushed off to the side so much in our life because we're so busy with the affairs of this world and the cares of this world and all the rest of the nonsense that just bombard us, that God is no more than an afterthought when we have a problem, when we show up in church and somebody starts talking about Him. That's what the problem is. And I'm not talking specifically as much about us as I am the rest of them out there. I mean, you know other Christians. You know how those people live. You know the kind of things they do and the things that they say and how serious they are about God. I mean, they think because they show up on church on Sunday morning, they've done that which was their duty to do and they're done for the week. I put my dollar in. Well, maybe that's the way it is. Maybe that ain't the way it is. I know this. I know the affection for our Creator has been left by the wayside a long ways back. Man, that thing's back there somewhere in the woods. You start asking people about loving God. Huh? What? Huh? Well, look at everything I do. And what is that? What is everything you do? Well, I've been a member of this church for 42 years. I mean, they think if they keep going to church, somehow it's collecting interest. And at some point, they can stop going and the interest continues on, you know. And they get credit for all that back there. Like a bank account. I don't know. Anyway, that's what love is. Now, charity is something else. Charity is a different thing. In a general sense, love, benevolence, goodwill, and disposition of the heart inclines men to think favorably of their fellow men and to do them good. Do you notice that stuff about love had nothing to do with doing anything? It was just the stuff that excited your pleasure. It was the emotions from within, the things that you enjoyed. All of a sudden, charity is to do them good. In theological sense, it includes supreme love to God, universal goodwill to men. In a more particular sense, love, kindness, affection, tenderness springing from natural relations as the charities of father, son, and brother. Liberality to the poor consisting in almsgiving or benefactions, or in gratuitous service to relieve them in distress. Alms, whatever is bestowed gratuitously on the poor for their relief. And what do you think gratuitous means? Well, I thought I understood what that meant. The meaning of gratuitous is free, voluntary, not required by justice, granted without claim or merit. So what is charity? It's doing something for somebody without any compulsion whatsoever. None. You realize that when you go by somebody with a sign up there on the street and it says, you know, vet, hungry, homeless, you know, please help. Do you realize that that guy's putting you under duress? Do you understand that? And all of a sudden you give that guy something, you're not giving it to him freely. You're not giving it to him voluntarily. He says, well, he's not making me do it. He's putting you under duress. He's making you feel bad. That's why people give to them. You know how you can tell the difference? When you do something for somebody you love, your heart is toward them. You're not trying to help that guy out. I mean, you think that whatever you give him is going to fix his life? I mean, the only thing it'll do is get him another drink. Old Sheriff Morgan down there telling us about these guys, he said, most of them, will go out there and work just long enough to get enough money to go on a bender for about a day or two. And then when they sober up, they go back and do it again. And he said, some of them that are out there real serious, he said, man, they can make $800 a day. $800 a day, man. Get me a dog with an infected ear and get out there. You know, they'll feel sorry for the dog. I mean, you understand that? Or these guys who take their kids, dress them in rags, and put dirt all over them, drag them out there on the street corner if that'd make them more money without getting in trouble for child endangerment. They would. They're con artists. They make you feel guilty about what you've got and what they don't have. So like I told my sister the other day, you need to ask some questions before you help somebody. First of all, how'd they get in this mess? Second of all, what I do, will it actually help them? Will it change anything in their life or just continue the same mess that they're in? Is it just give them a little bit of relief or does it actually fix something? If you're not fixing anything, you're not accomplishing anything. I mean, to help somebody out that is going to just stay like they are, you haven't helped anybody. All you did is just made it easier on them. Say, easier than what? Well, how do you know that what's happening to them right now is not God's doing? How do you know that God's not trying to show them something and putting them in a mess to where the pain gets so great they say never again? And all you've done is just given them some kind of a pain pill so that, well, I can get through this, I can get through this, I can get through this. We're going to look over in 1 Corinthians 13. We haven't even turned to a verse of Scripture yet, but you've heard a couple of them. 1 Corinthians 13. Now, 1 Corinthians 13 is the charity chapter. Let's read 1 through 3. 1 Corinthians 13. Though I speak with the tongue of men and of angels and have not charity, I am become a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not charity, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing. Charity is an absolute necessity. You notice something else in that verse right there at the end? Look at this. I give my body to be burned and have not charity, though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor. Wait a minute. I thought that was charity. And give all my stuff away to the poor, that must be charity. No, no. No. It's got to be gratuitously. You know what people do down here when they go down to work rescue mission on Thanksgiving? I had a guy that I worked with. He'd go down there every Thanksgiving, take his wife and his kids down there, and they'd help serve. He'd come back, tell me all about it. Man, it just makes me feel so good to do that. What's going on out there? It's still a selfish motive. It's not for them. And it's not freely given. It's given to get. It's I get something out of it too. That's a different thing. So he's talking about something that's just different than giving it all away. How much charity have we got? How much charity do you have? I don't know. I'd give stuff away. I help out people, you know. What's behind it? How much do you actually do that is actually classified charity, and how much of it isn't? Well, I've given these guys stuff along the road. Yeah, do I give all my goods to feed the poor? And you can give it all away, and you still haven't gotten anything done. Verses 4 through 8. Now, this is the proof, and the proof of charity is right here. Charity suffereth long and is kind. I mean, does that sound like you? Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up. Does not behave itself unseemly. Seeketh not her own. Is not easily provoked. Thinketh no evil. Rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. Beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Charity never faileth. Ah, that's a bunch of stuff. What's that? That's the charity test meter. You can tell how much charity you got by how much your life coincides with what you just read right there. Does that sound like you? I just thought I had charity, I guess. Go off on somebody, you know, it was kind. Kind, man, it suffereth long and is kind, oh man. And I get suffering, I get mean, you know. Get like an old dog that's wounded. But anyway, you start reading down through there and it takes on a different meaning. Now those actions are the measure and the proof. I don't know how much that reflects me and other people's lives. I don't know. I know this. I know the people that are truly charitable won't think they are. I know that's so. I know the people that think they're charitable aren't. It's like the people that think they're spiritual aren't. It's one of those deals, the people that think they're humble aren't. You know, it's like that. That's the way this stuff works. Anyway, yeah, we'll read one more here. We'll read verse 8, finish up that verse. But whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. I say, prophecies fail? Oh, my goodness, yeah, man, I've heard people prophesy. I've heard preachers prophesy. I never forget when I heard the first preacher prophesy. And he said, I'll prophesy. And he goes right on and tells something. It didn't happen. I mean, it didn't happen. And he was talking about a man. He was talking about this man's going to do a certain thing. He didn't do it. It's like, good night, man. So there's a lot of prophecies that fail. Are any of God's prophecies going to fail? No. He's not talking about those prophecies. What else in there? Prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. You know, it's real interesting. What's that next chapter all about? No. That whole chapter's on tongues. Oh, yeah, well, we got to practice our tongues. We got to get out this. We got to practice them here. Say this over and over. Hospital, shantai, and tie, bow tie. You know, junk like that. I mean, that one guy, that one woman, this is great, you know. This is third or fourth hand, so you can't really take it to the bank. Now, this woman's out in her backyard, and she hears the woman next door out there rattling off a bunch of nonsense. She's living next door to a Pentecostal preacher. That's his wife out there walking around reading stuff. And she looks over the fence. She said, what are you doing? Preacher's wife said, I'm practicing my tongues. You talk about a fool, boy. We are talking about people that are absolute fools. And there is no greater fool than the fool who fools himself. I mean, that's about as far as it goes right there. Anyway, whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. Now, there's tons of knowledge that has vanished away. In fact, this little old book right here is just a tiny little speck of what could have been written just about the time Jesus Christ was on this earth. I mean, the world itself could not contain the books. There was a lot of that knowledge that just died with the men that had it. In fact, there was a whole bunch of them that had stuff that God gave them private, and he told them not even to write about it. So there's a bunch of it passed away. Now, like next week, we're going to get back into some more of this stuff, and it's going somewhere. This lesson's not just, well, we're just going to talk about this. Because there's some things that the Lord put on my heart this last week, and I didn't even want to teach this. I want to get into something else entirely. But it's going to go somewhere next week. Let's close in prayer.